to make sure nobody gets in any trouble, well, at least Joanne and John, let me read the following disclaimer. This presentation is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Legal advice must be tailored to the specific circumstances of each case. Every effort has been made to ensure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area. It should never be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. With that, let's jump into our discussion. So let's start with a really easy question first. Why should collection agencies allow collectors to work from home permanently? And John Bedard, since this was your idea for this great webinar, we're going to give you the honor of going first.
Okay. I'll take all the credit then, Mike. Thank you. Look, I think there's a lot of opportunity in allowing agents to work from home. This pandemic, you've heard it 100 times, has caused everybody to rethink the way they operate their businesses. And to the extent we can find efficiencies, to the extent we can find increased production, to the extent we can actually manage a remote workforce as good or as better, as efficiently and as productively as we can manage, sort of what I'll call a premise-based workforce, then maybe there is opportunity there for our industry, just like many others, to be taking advantage of. And so that's a long answer to your short question of why should we do it? Because there may be opportunity there that we've overlooked in the past, simply because we've always, you know, we continue to do what we've always done, which is to have our, you know, sort of call center premise-based agents.
Yeah, great points, John. You know, our research has found that, you know, work from home was already a trend in the industry, but it wasn't a major trend. You know, our research says that pre-COVID, we had about 15% of contact center organizations that were leveraging some work from home agents. Today, that figure is 87%. Basically, organizations had a choice. We either allow work from home or we stop talking on the phone. So a lot of them jumped to from home, and the real, you know, and dealt with the technological hurdles in some cases of operationalizing it. But even our most recent survey found that 9% of the folks who responded to our survey of 130 plus contact center organizations representing a few hundred contact centers, 9% of them plan to increase their work from home footprint from what it is now. And more than half are going to, you know, are going to have at least half of their workforce deployed work from home versus the 15% they had before the pandemic started. So I think that, you know, COVID has really sort of, if you will, you know, goosed this process along. And there are a number of advantages to it. Savings on the organizational side, you know, those are estimated by folks like Gartner at, you know, about 20% of an employee's annual salary represents what an organization is typically paying in space costs and operating costs annually. There's benefit in it for the employee. The cost of, you know, transportation, insurance, food, wardrobe is going to represent somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000 a year. So this can be a win-win for both sides.
I can tell you, Colin, wardrobe in my own house? Yes, I agree. We've been saving on wardrobe in my own house. Man, let me tell you, the water bill is a lot lower. The soap bill in my house is a lot lower now. You know, it's like all those things. So all joking aside, have your clients in this survey that you talk about, have they attributed the reason to this increased work from home workforce exclusively to COVID, or are there other advantages now that they're seeing that they didn't see before, which is really causing them to shift in this direction?
Well, John, when we look at the percent that were work from home before the crisis, you know, they'd already, you know, looked at the, you know, the pros and cons of doing it, you know, business continuity advantages, and they'd already made the decision to jump. When we asked the folks who have worked from home beforehand, what, you know, what stopped them, you know, the first reason was there's no If it ain't broke, don't fix it. We don't need work from home because we're perfectly fine and perfectly happy with what we've got in our bricks and mortar physical centers. The next two areas are ones I've heard a lot over the years. Technology concerns. You know, we're not sure how to get there. We're not sure we need to spend money on figuring that out because we're relatively happy now. And then there are always vague security concerns, and management concerns. How are we going to manage them if we can't see what they're doing? You know, that whole management by walking around, very long walk if you have to go to everyone's house. So those were the reasons they weren't doing it. And COVID, all of a sudden, as you get into the lockdown environment and, self-isolation, well, we have to send all of our agents home and either they can answer calls or they won't. So what's our choice? And a lot of folks, cobbled together sort of a work from home strategy using spit baling wire, tin cans and string. And got something off the ground, and they've spent the past 8 to 10 to 12 weeks. But many centers have had to shut down completely or had to enforce social distancing, which dramatically reduced the number of agents that they could have in the center at any one time, and therefore reduced the number of calls that they are handling.
Let me jump in here for a second. It's so interesting, both your perspectives. I think one of the things also is I know when John and I talk to many of our clients, I think one of the reasons that they're going to continue work from home is that it's working out really well. I talked to a client yesterday and she said, I cannot believe how productive people are. Our lease is up next year. We're going to reconsider leasing the office space that we have. My employees are happier. Colin, as you know, and being in the call center space and also being in the arm center space, a lot of our clients were limited not only by state licensing requirements, they couldn't work from home based on their licensing, but many of their clients, large financial services clients, weren't too keen about people working from home because of the oversight and the security. They didn't have much of a choice at the end of March. Everybody just had to do it. But I think the shock is how well it's working out, which is fascinating. I mean, would we have ever done this had there not been for COVID? I think if there's an upside to COVID, and there is no upside to COVID, believe me, but the silver lining out of all of this is we've been forced to think differently. We've been forced to think out of the box, and it's working. Now, it's going to remain to be seen, and John and I are gearing up for this probably early next year, what supervision and examination is going to look like during this period of working from home. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny there. But for the time being, it has been a fairly positive experience. I want to point out there were two, Colin, you talked about some surveys that you did, which sound, I would love to look at those. There were two additional surveys that were done. One was done by American Banker. They have been doing several surveys of their C-suite executives. Now, this is all financial services.
Right.
They recently did a survey that came out, I'm going to say maybe last week or the week before, of financial services executives. And again, what we're talking about, they had to quickly get all their people working from home. It's been working out really well. But to your point, Colin, the technology is not there yet. And when they were surveyed, the resources that they're going to devote going forward is going to be an increased technology, which, as we know, banks have been working off archaic technology for a really long time. And again, COVID has forced them to rethink that. And that's where the investment is going to go in 2021, 2022, which I think is a good thing, which will ultimately help our industry. There was also a great survey done by the Wall Street Journal just the other day. And they surveyed 1,500 hiring managers. Now, this is across the board over several industries. And they asked, what about remote working has worked well and what has worked poorly? 49% said, obviously, the commute, the reduced amount of meetings. But 41% said the fewer distractions and 32% said the increased productivity. Those are the things that are working well. As far as what's not working, what's working poorly, to your point, Colin, 36% said technology issues. You know, that's been the biggest hurdle in trying to get, you know, get this off the ground. So it's really, I think it's fascinating. And it's really been a fascinating discussion with, you know, like-minded folks like yourself and John, to see what's been happening in the industry.
Well, great points. And I did see the Wall Street Journal survey. I liken the technology challenge with work from home to a sort of a question of can we, you know, so how can we do this? And once you can address the technology issues, then you can look at, you know, how do we want to operate? Because while everyone was afraid that there would be a decline in productivity because of the allure of the couch and the TV and the, you know, and the gaming console, what they actually saw, and research I saw published in one of the major dailies, was a 13% increase in productivity is what they found. What they aren't really accounting for, and some of the downsides there, is that anyone who's working from home doesn't have the same level of support and assistance. You know, they're going to receive less coaching and guidance. Now, if folks are, that's not going to be a big challenge for them. But if you've got fairly new staff who are still going up that learning curve, you know, they're now working in a more isolated area. They feel more alone. They feel like they have less and less assistance, and things like stress and anxiety become an issue. Mental health issues was already the number one cause of absenteeism in the U.S. before COVID-19. And Statistica had some research they published a few days ago that said that pre-COVID, percent of the Americans surveyed, and this was a 20 or 30,000 participant survey, 11% reported stress, anxiety or depression in the previous month. And when they surveyed them in May, they found that now 33% were that. So, you know, a threefold increase. So I think that we have to change the way we manage and work with our folks once we get our hands around how to work with the technology to make it function.
So Colin, when it comes to measuring productivity, we may be painting with too broad of a brush to just say everybody will be more productive if you go home, which makes me think about the profile of an agent that is ideally situated for remote work. In your experience, Colin, is there a difference in the profile of a highly productive remote employee, a work from home agent, versus the profile of an agent that operates best in a call center environment? Is there a difference there? Have you seen?
Yeah, I don't know that there's any defined profile. Certainly folks who self-motivated and self-starters are going to do better in a remote environment where the supervision is a little more lax and a lot more distant. Some people like to be told what to do. Some people like to have somebody, you know, riding herd on them and telling them that they should log in now, etc. And while we can do all of that in a remote environment, challenging, and the processes we had in place to do that in the physical center, we don't have. They don't work the same way when we go remote. So productivity, I tell my clients, you know, your productivity is, your mileage is going to vary here. In some organizations, yeah, more productive. In other organizations, it's been less productive. Especially, you know, if you have a lot of folks who still are not veterans, who are still learning, they're going to have longer calls. They're going to put people on hold more often as they try and figure out what it is, you know, how it is they answer this question. And if the organization doesn't have a robust toolkit in terms of a knowledge base or guidance and support, you know, or sentiment analysis running in the background, then it can really be challenging for an agent who's less than perfectly comfortable on their own on the phone. So, I think that there's already folks out there who are trying to sell the perfect profile of the work at home agent. I'm not quite sure we're there yet.
Yeah, it would be fascinating for an agency to study this is a perfect time for a case study right now, right? Because we got half the workforce in the call center, we got half the workforce at home, and to really begin to study the different productivities of different levels and different kinds of agents mm-hmm. across the company, right? Because and when this is, you know, quotes over, you know, when we're back to whatever this new normal is going to be, we're going to have some really, really good data that we can look at to say, okay, what kind of agents thrived in the remote workforce setting? What was their experience level? What was, you know, what was their profile? What, you know, what sort of comprised their success at home? And were they more successful at home than they were, you know, in the previous 8 months or 9 months that they were in the call center? And then comparing all that data to what happened in the call center during the same time. This is the perfect time for a case study like that. And I suspect, Mike, you'll be doing another seminar just like this one to talk about all that data because it's going to be valuable information, and I think. And it may not even be the same results and the same information across different companies, across different verticals.
Yeah, you're exactly right, John. Different organizations are going to have different success, and the activities of the folks on the phone, you know, is going to impact that as well. What we do know from tracking work from home operations for, you know, 10 years before COVID, is that folks that have, you know, is that it's difficult to make culture, it's difficult to maintain engagement in a remote environment. And typically the more successful organizations have had what I term a hub and spoke model, where, you know, we would typically start you off in the center when you are, you know, achieving the performance, quality, and, you know, and professionalism goals that we've set, and you've got, you know, the right work from home environment, then we let you go and work from home. But we bring you back into the contact center on some regular basis, be it a week, a month, or, you know, or every Thursday or something, because that allows us to do a few things. It allows us to continue to use our existing processes around training and coaching and quality. And it allows us to sort of reinforce the culture and values of the organization just through their and interaction with their peers. And it helps address some of the engagement and loneliness factor that can come from self-isolation and being truly all by yourself.
I think if you stagger when that one day a week is, it also kind of helps an office with like social distancing requirements too, because you can bring in 20% of your staff every day and you don't really have to worry about, you know, people being on top of one another. We had a question come in through the chat box, so I'm going to ask that, but I'm going to ask it kind of a different way, because one of the things we've talked about so far is that your mileage may vary. You know, different agencies are going to have different results. Different collectors are going to react differently to either working from home or working in an office. We had the question that came in saying, you know, my office is the employees really aren't necessarily all working as effectively at remotely as they were when they were in the office. So how do you sort of go about figuring out this guy, this collector works well from home, he or she can stay home. This collector doesn't, he's got to come into an office. I mean, is it like a collector by collector basis? You kind of have to go and figure out who can work from home and who can't?
I'll take that one. Yep. I think the answer to that is yes. I think there's a lot of factors to consider. In listening to Colin and John in the last segment, I think one of the things that we've learned about work from home and the agencies that I think that have been successful, and I've talked to a lot who have, and there could be others that maybe have not, is the issue of segmentation. So what is the, you know, what is the actual job? I mean, yes, they're answering the phone and they're talking to consumers, but there may be other aspects to what they do. So I think a lot of what I've seen is a lot of clients really segmenting job responsibilities and roles. And that has really helped in the work from home. So, you know, used to be if a collector was sitting, you know, in a call center and somebody wanted to take a payment, you could take the payment. That's been removed for obvious reasons. Maybe there's issues of disputes. They would maybe take the dispute if they were sitting in the call center. Now that has been removed. So I think part of it is looking at the job roles and responsibilities, how you break that down, there is a psychological component maybe of the agent itself. Maybe the agent works better in a group environment, and there are some agents that don't. I mean, I can tell you, I've been working from home since March. I love it. But many of my partners hate it. They're used to getting in their car, coming to work. They have their assistant. You know, they've got their routine. It really depends on the person. A lot of clients have been asking me, you know, what if, you know, we've had this discussion, a lot of these discussions, you know, what if the employee comes to me and says, I want to continue to work from home, but yet they aren't at that level where they are being productive. Those are going to be a lot of interesting conversations that a lot of businesses are going to have. So I think it, you know, I hate to use that awful word, it depends, but it does depend. And it depends on your company and your culture and how you do your business. Do you want to continue to do that? That's perfectly fine. Then everybody's going to have to come back to work, and there's going to be others that maybe who are going to stay home doing specific items. But you're going to have to do that reassessment of your company when, you know, I hate to say when all this is over. I don't know when that's going to be, or when the switch comes on and says, yes, it is all over. But that is a reassessment that you're all going to have to do.
Yeah, Joanna, I'd agree with that. You know, I think that, you know, that's the path where we're on here. And certainly not everybody likes to work from home. Well, we hear a lot of people really enjoy it. Folks who have gone and been deployed and work from home, we've seen, you know, 10 and 15% generally ask to come back to the call side. They don't like it, or maybe they don't like their family that much. I'm not sure. You know, those folks often are, you know, are ones who just work better in a tight, structured environment, you know, and while you get more absenteeism, you know, in a bricks and mortars center, you still get absenteeism. It's amazing how people can get lost between the, you know, the kitchen and the couch and phone in, but they do. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting, I think what all of this has, you know, there was no real dialogue about this. You know, you got a job and you went to work. Mm-hmm. Now there are different, as we've talked about, there's a lot of different options that are on the table now and now have become part of the discussion. And I think that's interesting. It's going to be empowering for a lot of workers. It will be empowering for a lot of employers as well, because look, you still have a business to run, and you have to, in some respects, dictate of how that business is going to run. But there are different and unique opportunities now that were not present when we started this year. That's for sure. So, you know, I, as John says, I can't wait to look at the data after we're over this, and because I think it's going to unveil some interesting aspects about our industry that we probably never thought of before.
Well, one of the points that your comment made me think of is the fact that we're hearing now from a lot of unions, where they have unionized environments, where they're saying, so workplace safety, so I slip and fall in my kitchen on my way to my desk, is that a workplace injury? So that whole area of policy management and, you know, and labor relations and litigation is you know, could be a wild and woolly area as well.
Yeah, but it also could be too. You know, you talk about benefits, you know, health insurance, this, you know, now work from home is potentially a benefit. And it could be, while, you know, before COVID happened, we were at 3% unemployment rate. It was hard to find employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know how difficult it's going to be after this, but, you know, working from home and having that flexibility now becomes a benefit of a potential job. Mm-hmm. And that's something to think about. And there will be competitiveness in that area.
Agreed.
John, I'm wondering, can an agency have a blanket policy in place, or do they need to have a blanket policy in place, or can they say work from home will be on a case-by-case basis and still be okay?
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with either of those scenarios. Now, everybody on this call knows I'm not an employment lawyer, but I don't think that there's anything wrong with either of those things. Somebody mentioned just a moment ago here about insurance, health insurance or benefit insurance. I think to myself that if I am an employer and I'm going to deploy a remote workforce, one of the things that I want to make sure is that I do have all the insurance coverages that I expect to have when my employees are on site when they are home, right? And so I'm contacting my insurance agent to say, hey, look, I've deployed a remote workforce out of necessity. Am I still covered for the same kind of things that I'm covered as if they came to the office? And if the answer is no, why and how do I get that coverage, right? And so those, to me, I think that's a very important thing to be talking with your insurance agents about, because you want to make sure that you have the coverage that you expect to have. And if you don't, you need to be educated about making some decisions about your company on whether to get that whether to get that coverage.
No, I think that's a great, and you know, certainly a good takeaway for everyone who's now madly writing notes saying, we have work from home, we didn't think of that, we better make a call when the webinar's over. But everyone is putting in place work from home policies. Some are right down to regimen, what that physical environment has to be. You must have a closed door, you must have a lockable door. You know, in turn, you know, there, it will define whose technology they can use. You know, are we allowing folks to use their own PC? Are we sending them home with a laptop or a Chromebook? Have we locked it down? Is there no removable media? What about internet bandwidth? What about right of audit? Do they have a webcam so we can peek in or do video calls with them? And policies have to be specific about all of those things and what those requirements are. It also has to address sort of what are the, you know, what are the minimum performance standards going forward in a post-COVID-19 world that you're going to need to be achieving to continue to get that benefit. Because if folks start slacking off and aren't meeting performance or quality standards, then you don't want them at home. You want them in the office, in the center, where you either work with them to improve their skills or help them move out to something else.
When making the decision, Colin, to kind of allow an agent or agents to work from home, what is the decision-making criteria? Should it just be how effective that agent is, more or less, and then it's sort of, you know, office or not, or home? Or is there, you know, what else should an agency be looking at in terms of the criteria?
Yeah, you know, great quick question, Mike. I think that, you know, what we have during COVID-19 is going to be different than what we had before and what we'll have after. You know, before and after, you know, if you have a model which is saying we're going to have, you know, 75% of our staff working remotely, then you're going to have a performance matrix that sort of says, when you have this level of performance with this level of quality, you know, with this level of, you know, complaints or customer satisfaction, et cetera, then you become eligible to work from home if your boss, your supervisor thinks it's a good idea, and you can comply with all these things. So that's what it's going to be later once we get past COVID. Right now, everyone's already working from home. You know, even as we start up our physical centers again, you know, we looked at, you know, a number of different actual client layouts for their contact center. And using 6-foot workstations, which in a contact center is a large workstation, you still are going to, you know, render 60 to 70% of the workstations unusable if you're supporting, you know, that 6 feet of physical distancing. And again, your actual mileage may vary depending on the size of your workstations, the size of the aisles, you know, how much space is behind you, et cetera. But when you look at that, even when we can start to use our bricks and mortar centers again, we need to have 60 to 70% of our workforce working remote. And at that point, I think, picking up on what John said earlier, as we start to analyze the data of how people are performing at home, both in terms of productivity and in terms of quality, the quality of the work, then we can start to make some decisions on who we might want to bring back into the center as that opportunity opens up for us. So I think that's likely the way this is going to evolve. And I think that, you know, you can't really get into the, you know, should Colin work from home or should he be bricks and mortar, unless you've got the capacity in both the places to support it. And in a typical hub and spoke model, what you're really trying to do is to get almost everyone to work from home, but you're bringing them in through the center to sort of ingrained the base knowledge and training. And then you're bringing them in when they need remedial help or assistance or training on something new. You don't want to be sitting there with an empty, a large empty contact center that nobody's in because everyone wants to come home, or have invested, to Joanne's point, a lot of money in new technology to enable our work from home and have nobody want to be there because they or we right. want them all to be in the center.
Right.
The beauty of it, Colin, is that our industry, the ARM industry, long before COVID, has been measuring those KPIs, right?
Yep.
Those compliance KPIs, those production KPIs, all of that, we were measuring those long before this came by, which is what makes this time right now, to the extent there's a silver lining in a remote workforce deployment circumstance, we can say, wow, we are going to be able to make some very smart decisions about who we're going to leave as a permanent remote employee, who we're going to bring back into the call center, how we're going to rotate, and what we're going to do. All those KPIs are there, and I think that puts us in a unique position, or at least this industry in a unique position, to be able to make some really smart decisions after this, because there are a lot of industries that don't measure those things as well or as closely as our industry measures those things.
Yeah, and that's certainly a leg up, and most contact centers measure those things at great detail as well. So I great opportunity, John.
We had a question come in. I want to ask it to Joanne, but I'm not sure if she's going to be the best person, but it has to do with electricity going out. So I figure you're the most appropriate, because that's why you're not able to do the video today. But say the power at the office goes out while everybody is working remotely. What would be the standard practice for paying or not paying the employees?
It's a good question. And I actually tackled that question a couple days ago, because I was working on a telecommuting agreement and having some discussion about that with a bunch of folks. Well, first of all, I think it first depends, are remote employees going to be salary employees, or are they going to be hourly employees? And I think you have to think about that for reasons such as, how much are they really working? What happens if the power goes out? What happens if their computer breaks down and they can't work? So for hourly employees, it's somewhat easy, because they clock out, and when they can, and get your computer back up or the power comes on, they can clock back in. But think about it. What happens if the power goes out in a call center and you've got regular employees? You still got to pay them. So, you have to decide, and, depending on the circumstance of your business and how you operate, what the compensation structure of a telecommuting employee is going to look like.
Yeah, one of the interesting aspects of work from home actually gives you some capabilities in terms of a workforce management that yep. you don't have in bricks and mortar. Work from home, you can split shift. I can work 2 hours. I can work 6 hours, in the afternoon and evening, and be off for 4 hours in the middle. You can't do that in a bricks and mortar center, So addressing issues like that power failure. So, I worked for an hour and a half. The power went out. I clocked out. It came back on, and I worked an hour and a half longer than I would have normally. Maybe that's the approach. So, there is more flexibility there in terms of staffing and coverage, and getting folks slotted against the calendar, against the schedule.
You're on mute, Mike.
Another question that's come in. I got it. Thank you, John. In general, many attorneys have been working from home prior to this situation. We haven't seen the same level of working from home for collection lawyers prior to this pandemic. Have you heard of any collection law firms having different kinds of challenges with work from home environments that are different from the challenges and opportunities agencies are having?
Wow.
Anyone want to weigh in?
I can weigh in a little bit on that. Just, because I work in a law firm. It might not be a collection law firm, but I work in a law firm. And there's been lots of challenges you've had court systems that have been shut down. So that has made the work, some of the work, difficult, in the extent that things can't be filed. Meetings, motions cannot be heard. So there's been some, you know, unfortunately not a good amount of work there. Some cases, you know, depending if you're a litigator, even in a collection cases, you know, some courts demand appearances. They're not set up for remote, or if they set up for remote, they're not working well, or they're continuing cases. I mean, I have heard stories of arbitrations, especially in the Philadelphia area, that are now continued till March. So from a workflow process for a lot of collection firms, it's been difficult. And also, you know, many states have put moratoriums on garnishments and certain legal proceedings. So for many law firms, yeah, people are working from home. I worked from home before the pandemic. I was able to do, even when I was doing collection work, I was able to work from home and file what I needed to file. But there are other, I don't think it's the productivity issue. I think it's the external problems of the court system that have made it difficult for a lot of collection law firms during this pandemic.
Yeah. And you know, I have not heard from law firm collection clients that there are, that they have unique challenges with respect to their work from home remote workforce. But I, you know, and the same thing's happening here in Georgia in terms of, you know, certain kind of actions just be, there's a moratorium on them. And now courts are slowly, I think our emergency judicial order expires on June 11th or 12th. And so things are beginning to at least look promising in terms of actually opening up the court systems. I can tell you though, you know, two of the biggest challenges that we've faced in our own office with respect to our remotely deployed workforce, which are minor compared to all the other things, which the first one was obtaining webcams for everybody, right? That was not easy. I am now familiar with the Atlanta webcam underworld. And because what I had to do to get webcams in Atlanta is not a flattering thing. So obtaining equipment was hard for us. The other thing that we've done is we've now made sure that we all, when for court hearings, you know, our federal courts have been rocking and rolling, and our federal judges now are ordering hearings to be conducted by Zoom. You know, for the last 10 years, we'd be doing hearings by telephone. Now the judges are doing it by Zoom, and we've now had hearings by Zoom. And so, challenge number two for the remote lawyers that are working at home is making sure that everybody who attends the hearing by Zoom has the same fake virtual background behind us, so that we're not all in our homes, with the court, because the judge even has a virtual background behind the judge as well. So we have now uniform. It looks like we're standing in front of some nice bricks, and so we all have the same background. But I mean, to call those unique challenges to the law firms is probably a stretch. But nonetheless, those are the very minor things that we had to deal with. But I'm not hearing from law firm clients that they've got challenges that are unique to the practice of collections.
I think I speak for everybody, John, when we all want to hear the underworld story and how you procured your webcams and actually what you had to do.
Cash only, I tell you what. Cash only, that's all I'm going to say.
I think that's going to be this an upcoming webinar in and of itself. I think we'll have John reach out his tail of webcam procurement.
Yep.
Sure, an RFP wasn't involved.
No.
All right. Well, we spent like 35 minutes now talking about why collection agencies should allow collectors to work from home. I'm wondering if, you know, we should spend a few minutes talking about why shouldn't collection agencies spend or allow collectors to work from home. Obviously, this whole conversation is predicated on whether an agency is based in a state in which a license is required to collect, and that license is predicated on collectors working inside an office. So all of that aside, is there any argument to be made for forcing or making collectors come back to the office instead of working from home? Does anyone want to go first?
Sure, I'm happy to.
Go ahead,
Mike. One of the big reasons why folks are going to require folks to come back into the office is that they haven't solved their technology issues. You know, and they haven't invested, time or effort or money to really run an effective remote contact center. One of our clients is a financial services firm based in Texas, and they haven't solved it. Yes, operating, they're sort of limping by, and they're planning to continue to limp until they can bring everyone back to the center. That's not what we would recommend, but it's the path they've chosen. Because to be effective, you not only need the technology to work, you need to make sure you have the support in place for your, for your collectors. You need to make sure you have the training ability and they can support all the compliance requirements and security compliance. And all of that, is going to take effort and is going to take investment. And some organizations, don't wish to make that. And there's still folks who say that, if I can't see them, how do I know they're really working? So I think that personal preference of senior leadership is also going to have an impact on that.
I also think it's going to depend on those states. I mean, right now, states have waived the requirements to the extent that a license is required. Are states going to continue to do that? We don't know. I've talked to several people about that because they're trying to plan for the future. Right now, everybody's working at home based on a waiver from the governor. Is the governor, what's going to happen in September? And I'm going to be forced to bring people back. John and I have been on a lot of calls about this, and I think that there needs to be, to the extent that it is working and is something the industry wants to continue to do, there's going to have to be a collected effort to go to state regulators, depending on who's in charge of regulating the license, and make the pitch to continue or modifying the license requirements so that people can work from home.
Yeah, so
it's not a change, gonna have to bring them back.
Right. Yes. So it's almost a force. It's a forced elimination of the remote workforce. And, we keep talking about the data. We keep talking about case studies. This is the perfect case study time. Measuring the impact of a remote workforce on consumers is another area of very, very, high significance. It's like, what impact is this having on consumers? Is there a way to measure that impact of a remotely deployed workforce on consumers? And if there is a way to measure it, what do those measures tell us about a consumer's experience as a result in the change of a remotely deployed workforce by an industry? Because I think that regulators are going to be very, very sensitive to the impact on consumers that this experiment has caused. Just like you said, Joanne, there are several states that do not ordinarily allow agents to work from home. You're required to work at your licensed location, and they have waived those requirements because of these circumstances. And it would be very strong evidence, in my view, to go back to those regulators when things get back to this new normal with the data that shows consumers there was no negative impact on consumers as a result of this dramatic change in policy, or maybe there was an impact, maybe it was a positive impact. But measuring all of that, I think, is going to be the best evidence when it comes time to convincing those regulators that a permanent remote workforce in our industry should be allowed from a policy perspective.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
as always, absolutely right.
And and the fact that we be tracking things like customer satisfaction levels and complaints, and if there are publicly registered complaints, those are going to be tracked. For a case study, though, this is actually, we've increased the level of difficulty just with the current economic situation and the number of folks who are, who have been furloughed or unemployed. It's, that's going to, could adversely affect the findings as well. But I think if we can maintain status quo on customer sat and on complaint levels from what we had pre-COVID-19 through this pandemic, and we can go to the regulators with that type of data, I think it makes a very compelling argument for having more autonomy and more choice in.
Well, I think one of the first things you can do is you can look at the CFPB complaint portal. Mm-hmm. And while there's been a lot of complaints about mortgages and credit reporting, debt collection complaints are not even in the top three. Now, and they stay and they haven't increased, and they're pretty much the same as they were this time last year. So I think that's another interesting data point on a federal level. From a state level, I don't know how state complaints are necessarily tracked from state to state, but you can certainly look at those complaints as well.
Would you advocate or like to see agencies incorporating some sort of satisfaction, even if it's like a one question automated prompt at the end of a call or something like that to sort of measure satisfaction? Are there other things that an agency can do?
I think that's a great idea. And, you know, as what we've also seen from work from home is agencies going more digital, more traffic on their web portals. You can certainly do a survey, maybe after a call is over. You see that when you call your credit card company, they say, you know, after this call, you know, while you're waiting to speak to a customer service representative, they'll say, after this call, would you mind taking a short survey? And you have the option of saying yes or no. But I think there's a lot of tools that agencies could use to track that. I've heard somebody posted on LinkedIn, maybe John, maybe you reposted, I'm not sure. Somebody sent a letter to an agency, and because they were able to resolve their debt right at the beginning of COVID, they bought a house, and they took a picture of the house that they bought only because they were able to, you know, get a judgment satisfied or whatever the circumstances were. So there's a lot of positive stories out there. We've always asked our clients and our colleagues to, you know, cultivate those stories and, you know, collect them and be able to put them out there. Now's a great time to do it.
Should agencies and or the industry be proactively lobbying states before they have to make this decision to try and convince them or persuade them to allow this, whatever the status quo is now, to continue? Or is it something where they have to wait?
No, I think that they should be looking now on a state-by-state basis and engaging. You know, it depends on the state. Some states have a, you know, what you would call a Division of Financial Services or whoever the licensing body is. And there should definitely be some engagement now to see where they're going. I know that some of the associations are looking to do this collectively and speaking with either the Conference of State Banking Supervisors or, you know, going it on a state-by-state basis. But yeah, now it definitely is the time because we are going to, these emergency orders are going to end, hopefully. We want them to end soon. And you don't want to be caught off guard when all of a sudden they flip the switch and now everybody's got to come home. Are you ready for, you know, or come home, go back to work. Are you ready for that? I mean, you know, is your agency ready for everybody to come back? I haven't been there for 4 months or 3 months. So there is a lot to think about.
Yeah, and I agree. If we want the rules to change, engagement now, engagement when we have the data and the evidence to support the position that we want to advocate for, I think, yes, the answer is yes, we do want to have that engagement. But before, you know, the rule sort of goes back to the way it was, and then we're, you know, we're two steps behind in terms of advocating for a rule change. Now, you know, it won't change, in my view, without that effort. Without that effort, I don't think it's going to change. And that effort needs to include an answer to the question, what's in it for me in terms of, you know, the regulators? You know, what are they going to do? Is it going to result in fewer branch licenses or fewer branch license fees because everybody's going to go to a remote workforce and not have to pay branch license fees? You know, so we're going to have to think through sort of the revenue proposition as well for states. Who rely on all revenue from regulated entities. And so I think solving that problem and providing the evidence and support that it takes to convince regulators that consumers at least were not harmed, and at most were actually benefiting from a remotely deployed workforce, I think the combination of those two things are going to be necessary ingredients to achieving permanent change within the places that require or that prohibit remote workforces for our industry.
Colin, I wanted to bring you back in. I'm curious, what advice would you give to an agency how to respond when a collector asks to work from home? Say everyone's supposed to be coming back to the office, but this collector wants to work from home. How would you advise an agency respond to that request?
You're on mute, buddy.
What, once I get off mute, I sound much better. I'm smarter on mute, I found, though. Of course, the first caveat is are they allowed to work from home based on status? But, then I think you really have to look at what is your policy Google going to say. You know, if you're going to allow folks to work from home, if you're going to allow them to have a vote on that, then, and you can legally do it and they're going to be more productive, then why not, we've got a lot of clients who don't have a formal work at home policy, but yet, they've had really valuable employees who decided to move to Houston and they wanted to keep them on, and they wanted to keep them on the job. And all of a sudden, so we don't have remote workers, but I've got somebody in Houston and another one in Toledo or something. And if you have expert staff that you really don't want to lose, being able to give an option to work from home, it can sometimes be a very positive advantage. And those are sort of one-off ad hoc situations rather than structured. But, I think you have to look at the employee, the value of the employee, the performance, look at how they fit. But if you're going to create a precedent that some people get to work from home and some don't, you can have some engagement and morale issues if some animals look more equal than others, right? So mm-hmm. Bit of a quagmire.
Colin, I promise I'm getting a t-shirt made that says I'm smarter on mute. All right. I'm going to wear it on these things. I love it. I love it. With respect to, maybe a remotely deployed workforce is such an attractive benefit to agents that we talked about earlier that, Maybe it depends on scorecard, all these KPIs. Yep. If when you meet certain KPIs, you earn,
earn the right.
The right, the trust, all those things to remain in a remote capacity, albeit not without all the very same controls and monitoring and all the other things that happen while you're in, in the call center. But nonetheless, to the extent it's that valuable, we can really drive production, productivity, and better KPIs because of it.
Yeah, and we've got clients who use it as a re-earnable reward.
Ah.
You need to make those KPIs, and you need to get your supervisors sign off to let you go work from home. If your productivity, based on those KPIs, or your quality dips below the threshold, you have to get your, you have to scurry back and get your office because until you get back over the threshold for whatever the period of time is, you can't work from home. So there is a motivational factor there for the employee who wants to work from home to really keep their performance and quality at a high level so they don't lose what they worked so hard to attain.
Yeah. Yep.
Excellent. We have time for one last question, which has come in. There was a mention before when we were talking about insurance. With respect to the coverage is the same for those who are working from home versus working in the office. Does anybody know if a company's errors and omissions insurance is going to be affected by deploying a remote workforce? Does John Cash Only Bedard want to take that?
Thank you, Larry.
You're not living that down. You're not living down.
I have not seen an E&O carrier deny coverage to an agency on a claim on the basis of the employee involved in the claim having been remote. But it's only been going on for what, 8 weeks, 10 weeks now. So, there hasn't been much opportunity for that either. And so to answer the direct question, no, I have not seen that. And so the next follow-up question is, well, have you ever seen a term in an E&O policy that that would cause the you know, a claim to be denied on the basis that the participant was you know, in a remote workforce? I can't say that I have, but I also can't say that I really ever looked for that. Joanne, you ever seen anything like that?
Well, I think it's difficult to talk about that. Number one, people have not been in mass been working from home.
Yeah.
And two, to the extent that there's been a waiver in a state, it's not legal. So it's not illegal, I should say. So I think, you know, we don't know yet. But, you know, John, you made a very good recommendation. Now's the time to talk to your broker and really make sure as we move forward, you know, what's your insurance coverage going to look like under the circumstances of a changing workforce environment. So, yeah, I mean, that is an, you know, an immediate discussion that you all need to have.
And not just the E&O insurance, the workers' comp, you know, premises liability. Now, I mean, you name it. It's like the whole.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've done a fair amount of work from home audits or putting, you know, checklists and audits together right now. You know, there's going to have to be, if people do want to, you know, continue to work from home, your clients are going to demand, you know, what that environment's going to look like. You're going to have to do some sort of assessment, and their insurance is going to be, you know, do they have renter's insurance? What kind of insurance do they have? Because what happens if the computer gets stolen or whatever? There's so many what ifs, but insurance is a key factor that's got to be at the top of your list at the moment. I agree.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and I say unfortunately because we've only come up with two T-shirt ideas, and I was hoping we'd get more tonight. But Colin, John, Joanne, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you so much for your participation. I thought the ideas, the insights were awesome, and I'm just going to speak on behalf of everybody who participated. I learned a lot, and that was really something. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Joanne and Colin. Until next time.
All right, everybody. Thanks for participating today. We'll be back soon with more webinars in the near future. Until then, stay safe, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care.
Will do.
Thanks, bye-bye. All.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.